All right, welcome to the Oath of the Gatewatch review show for Bearded Magic. I'm Nathaniel Riggs.
I'm Nate Hoffman.
And today we're going to review Oath of the Gatewatch, if you didn't figure that out already.
Woo! Let's get into that.
As always, our show today is brought to you by SavePoint Games. You can go to mysavepoint.com and use the promo code BEARD to get 3% off.
Yeah, so go check out the website today. Help support the show.
Shut up and sit down.
Alright, this episode's pretty self-explanatory. We're doing a set review for Oath of the Gatewatch. We're not going to touch on each individual card.
Yeah, if you want that, you can go to the limited resources set review.
Yeah, or just like LSVs individually or something like that.
Yeah.
What we're going to focus on here is like basically the top cards of each color, and then for constructed, mostly commons and uncommons for like a limited perspective. And then we'll have like top constructed cards, probably touch that towards the end. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we can do it at the beginning. I don't really know.
Yeah, we'll deal with like our top five constructed cards and things we're going to brew around at the end of the episode, I think, for now. We'll cover each color, the multicolor stuff, and the colorless stuff. And like you said, mostly lean towards commons, uncommons, rares that you should definitely pick,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
All right, so I guess we can just start in Wooburg order.
Yep.
Start with like our top five cards. We don't really have these in any like specific order. I know we like Searing Light, which is white, destroy an attacking or blocking creature with power two or less. The reason this card's good is it's just there's a lot of things in the set. It's also cheap. It's just this effect is good and limited.
Yeah, having instant speed removal this cheap and this efficient is good, and you should be looking to draft removal above creatures of equal or lesser value, so you should be looking at cards like this.
Yeah, this is definitely a card that I'm like super happy to play two, maybe three of in a deck. Three is pushing it a little for this type of effect, being that
it gets super mediocre super fast.
Yeah, but like two is like I think really strong in a deck. I'm very happy to play that many.
Yeah, and along the lines of removal cards in white that you want to be taking, I think Immolating Glare, one in a white, destroy target attacking creature. It's an uncommon. It's also an instant. I think this is just another one that is a good, efficient card that it, like, in a world where, say, Doomblade or something like that was in the set, it would be a lot worse, but now that we're having to deal with the fact that they don't print efficient removal as well, you want to take cards like Immolating Glare.
Yeah, dealing with any attacking creature is about as unconditional as white removal comes nowadays, it seems, at least for this cost. Again, still on the removal line, Isolation Zone is an excellent common.
Yeah, it's definitely the worst of the three white removal spells, but it's also the most catch-all of all the removal spells.
Yeah, and the fact that it can deal with things like Stasis Snares and other Isolation Zones is not irrelevant. You get to get your creatures back if they used one of their own on it, or there's some problematic enchantments in Battle for Zendikar and this set that are relevant to hit, like some of the retreats and stuff like that.
Yeah, so Isolation Zone, if you don't know what it does, is two white enchantment. It's a common, like we said, and it's when Isolation Zone enters the battlefield, exile target creature or enchantment an opponent controls until Isolation Zone leaves the battlefield.
Yeah, so it's your typical, you know,
Oblivion Ring type effect. With the fixed Oblivion Ring text.
Yeah. After that, there's a few creatures that we like. I think the big one is Wall of Resurgence, which is a 2 and a white 06 defender. So a 3 mana 06 defender. That up front, that's not a good rate. But where you get the value is the end of the battlefield effect, which when it enters, you may put 3 counters on a land, and then that creature or that land becomes a 0/0 creature for the rest of the game.
Yeah, so it awakens for 3 in essence.
Yeah. Now, there are some downsides to this. Obviously, early on in the game, you're not really going to get to attack much with this 3/3. You're using your resources to, you know, progress your board and stuff. But later on in the game, it's just going to be an extra 3/3 that you have to stall the game with the 06 wall until it becomes viable.
Yeah, also, it's comparable to what's the 06 for one and a white in Battle for Zendikar?
Fortified Rampart.
That's Fortified Rampart. I actually have one sitting right here. Should have seen that. But it's like Fortified Rampart in the sense that you play it to stop the aggressive decks from beating you down while you're playing flyers and things like that. And even if you don't use the 3-3 to beat down with, it still taps for mana. So it's not like you're completely losing a land. You're just opening it up to getting killed. And you can still use it for mana. But you can also use it to block middling like 1-1s or 2-1s or something like that from the hyper-aggressive decks.
Yep, yep. The other card I think we like from the set is a 4-drop. This one's also an uncommon. Relief Captain. It's 2 white-white for a 3-2. Again, not awful stats for limited. It's almost a Hill Giant. But then when it enters the battlefield, you get to support 3 and 1. So this is this set is kind of designed for multiplayer, 2-hit a giant format, where 1, maybe in a just 1-versus-1 format, support 3, while being good, you might not always get it, but even support 2 is a powerful effect. If you can like put 2 counters on a thing, you're getting positive stats.
Yep.
But in 2-headed giant, this card really shines, where it's super easy to find 3 creatures between you and your partner to put counters on, where you're getting a full like 6-5 worth of stats for 4 mana.
Mm. Yeah, support, if you don't know what it does, it's... when it shows up on a creature, it'll be support X, and X could be 3 like on Relief Captain, or 2 like on other cards, things like that. And it's put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 3 other target creatures. Mm-hmm. And then if it's on a spell, or an instant or sorcery, it actually says put a +1/+1 counter of each up to 2 target creatures. So it's actually interesting that they word it differently if it's on a creature or a spell, but that's so that you can't support a creature that's, this creature can't support itself.
Yes, that is true. And that basically covers the things for white.
We'll do a nod to the rares and mythics, and that like something like Linvala.
Obviously, like a bunch of the mythics are great cards. Linvala is probably one of the strongest cards in the set as far as limited goes.
Eldrazi Displacer is good, things like that.
Even General Tazri. I know I didn't think this card is good as LSV rated this card 3.5, I believe, out of 5. Okay. I think this card's good. It definitely doesn't take much for it to be great. It tutors for an ally out of your deck when it comes out of the battlefield, comes to the battlefield. It's a decent card.
Bare minimum, it replaces itself.
Yeah, exactly. Which is decent card advantage. And a 3-4 is not stats to laugh at. So, blue cards. We, think blue is one of the other stronger colors in this limited format, in my opinion. One of the spells I like Void Shatter a lot. It's 1 blue-blue Devoid, and is just Dissipate, which a 3-mana counter spell is good in most limited formats. It hits everything and has relevant exile tech for this format. Another card that's Devoid is Cultivator Drone, which is a 3-mana 2/3 that taps for a colorless, but you only get to spend that on colorless spells or abilities and stuff like that, like with Devoid. I think, honestly, it's just going to be one of those enablers you like in your deck, where 3-mana 2/3 is not awful stats, and then it helps you enable your other more colorless cards, like with actual colorless symbols in them. I think that's an important place to be, since I think a lot of them are pretty powerful. Yes. If you can pick them up.
One thing to note about Cultivator Drone, which I actually just heard about on JudgeCast today, was not only can you spend the colorless to cast colorless spells or to activate colorless abilities, but like it says, pay a cost that contains colorless. So that means a triggered ability that says, hey, you need to pay a colorless for this. You can use this to pay that.
Another creature along these lines is Cyclone Sire. This card is an uncommon. It's 4 and a blue, 3-4 flyer. So that's pretty okay as far as stats in the set goes already.
Yeah, normally when you vanilla test creatures, if they have the keyword flying, they'll lose probably 2 or 3 power off the vanilla test of converted mana cost to power.
Yeah, and then a bonus, when it dies, you get to put 3 counters on a land and awaken that land, essentially. I think this card's just great. It's not quite a 2-for-1, but that's definitely a stage of the game where that 3-3 is going to just be a creature that's a bonus on top of the Cyclone Sire.
I'd go as far to say that it's pretty much a 2-for-1.
Yeah, like, the card is just powerful. It's definitely a pick-winnable card, though not necessarily. It's a card I would not be unhappy to pack one, pick one. Another card, it's another quotes around this removal spell, Sweep Away. It's 2 and a blue, instant, you get to put a creature on return a creature to its owner's hand, or if that creature is attacking, you get to put it on top of their owner's library, which is just an effect we've seen before, things like Time Ebb and stuff, where that's a powerful effect. You get to take away your opponent's draw step, and it gives you a little bit of a tempo advantage as well.
Yeah, the decks you're looking to play a card like this in are the blue-red type decks that are beating down and can take advantage of the tempo loss of bouncing a creature to the owner's hand and or top of the library. So you want to be looking for something like the blue-red Eldrazi deck out of Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah, but even in like a control deck, obviously, this type of card is fine. It's card neutral, which is the card. I would play this in any deck that played blue, happily. Last card for blue in like a top five situation, Comparative Analysis. This card is a little weaker than the other ones, but I think it's still a strong effect. It's 3 and a blue, target player draws 2 cards, and then it has the surge cost of 2 and a blue. You know, it's also instant speed. It's just a draw 2 effect, which is nice to have. It's card advantage.
Yeah, surge, for those that don't know, is you may cast this spell for its surge cost if you or a teammate has cast another spell this turn.
Yeah, so, I mean, the surge on this one's probably a little hard to pull off most of the time, but there's definitely situations where you'll do it.
Yeah, and just having draw 2 cards on a spell, especially an instant speed one, so you get to hold up removal spells or counter spells, and then draw 2 cards at their end step if they didn't do anything that you need to react to, as opposed to sorcery speed, having to tap out on your own turn.
Yeah, I think this card is going to be one that, as far as commons go, is going to be picked pretty highly.
Mm-hmm.
Some, again, to the mythic point of things and rares and stuff like that, there's a bunch of good blue ones.
Yeah, watch out for Sphinx of the Final Word is definitely a card you want to take. It's a mythic, though, so it's not going to come up that often. Yeah.
And then there's some Devoid rares that are great, like Deep Fathom Skulker is a fine card that will give you good card advantage. Dimensional Infiltrator is not super powerful, but the fact that it has Flash is relevant.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of commons and uncommons that I would take over Dimensional Infiltrator.
So I guess on to black. I definitely know the first card that we have here.
I'm not as big, like, I understand that this card is good. I don't think it's as absurd as you think it is.
I love this card. Grasp of Darkness, I think, is insane.
It's black, black, instant, target creature gets -4/-4?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, in previous standards and draft formats, this effect hasn't been bonkers like I think it is for this one. Removal's just not as good nowadays. I think you would agree with me on that.
Yeah, like I pointed out earlier, we aren't in an era of playing
Doomblade and stuff like that. Yeah. So having this card, we looked through it, and this card kills everything but like 3 or 4 creatures in this set. It's like
well, everything that's not green. I think green had a bunch of creatures that it didn't kill.
I think green had a bunch of
creatures. But also keep in mind, I think between you and I, we decided green's probably the least powerful color.
Yeah, still, it's pretty bad in the set still, like Battle for Zendikar was. But yeah, I think we did an analysis, and like it kills almost everything in the set, and like most of the things it doesn't kill are like mythics.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they're usually tough to kill anyway.
And even if you can't kill them, it also it's a
way
it,
to let you
it
trade.
Deals with stats, so you get to trade and or eat creatures and things like that. So you can set up, maybe it is a 2-for-1, but if it's a 2-for-1 for a mythic that's going to destroy you, it's still good for you.
Yeah. Obviously, that card, I would pick one that over, I think, a lot of cards, honestly. Another card, Tar Snare, it's essentially close to the same thing.
Eh, kind of. It's 2 and a black, instant speed, target creature gets -3/-2 until end of turn. So the big thing to point out is Tar Snare is a common, Grasp of Darkness is an uncommon.
Mm-hmm. Another thing to point out about it is Tar Snare does not cost double black, so it's much easier to splash in your, you know, less heavy black decks.
Okay.
Which, it's still a great card. -2, I think, again, kills a lot of the things in the set.
Yeah, it doesn't. And then, obviously doesn't kill nearly as much, but it kills enough for it to be relevant. I wouldn't play a third or a fourth copy of it, but I could see playing 2 copies of Tar Snare in any black deck.
And then, obviously, its ability to be used as, like, a combat trick, just like Grasp Ken, is powerful.
Correct.
Where you get to use your creature to eat theirs.
Yep.
To me, most of the black cards that were good, removal, another black card I thought was excellent. excellent. Not excellent, but it's removal spell, which is good and limited. Oblivion Strike, which is 3 and a black, exile target creature. It's as simple as that. It has Devoid.
It's a sorcery as well.
Yeah, it's not excellent, but it's definitely... It's where
removal... bad removal, you want to be high on the removal spells. Mm-hmm.
Especially ones that deal with any creature.
Yeah.
Like, these will... It kills everything in the set, except for the Hexproof Sphinx, so...
Yeah, I think this is comparable to... What was the 7-drop? Exile anything?
Scour of Existence, I think, is a little worse than this card.
Well, yeah, Scour is worse, yeah. But having to pay a color... Like, having a colored source mm-hmm. in the cost, making up for 4 mana.
Or 3 mana.
3 mana.
Mm-hmm. The black cards get worse from there. Sky Scour is one I think is pretty decent from there.
Yeah, 1 and a black, Devoid, Flying. Whenever you cast a color spell, Sky Scour gets +1/+0 until end of turn, and it's a 1/2.
Yeah, so it's pretty easy to have this be a 2/2 flyer for 2, which is a good rate, and then has upside. Obviously, sometimes it's downside, but I think Mist Intruder was the 1/2 flyer for 2 in blue from Battle for Zendikar with Ingest.
Mm-hmm.
It saw plenty of play.
Yeah, and then there's a bunch of, like, middling creatures and things mm-hmm. like that that yeah. are good enough to take, but like we said, we're only doing top 5.
Well, that was 4, so...
Well, I was going to say that I think we still have one more, though.
I think my next favorite is Visions of Brutality. It's another Devoid card, I believe. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. 1 and a black, Devoid, enchant creature. Enchant creature can't block. Whenever enchanted creature deals damage, its controller loses that much life.
All right. So this is a weird card, especially for me to like this card this much. It's not just a removal spell, but I think it very easily can get close to it.
Mm-hmm.
The type of deck you want to play this in, obviously, is like a sort of more aggressive black style deck.
Correct.
Where, one, it lets you push through some damage just on its own, mm-hmm. taking a blocker out of the way. And then whenever that creature deals damage, they're pressuring their owner's life total. So if you put it on something huge like an Eldrazi, it can just be a straight removal spell because they're at too low of a life total to ever attack with that creature. And then you get to, you know, continue to pick away at them with your small dorks or whatever. And even if it's just dudes that chump block a creature, it can quickly take that creature out of the math mm-hmm. because they're taking too much damage.
Things to keep in mind with Visions of Brutality. One point that I thought was funny was the fact that them adding that the enchanted creature can't block actually feels like it balances the card more.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they didn't put that line of text in, then all of a sudden you're in situations where you want to block, but it's like you're blocking with a 5/5 and taking 5 damage because you're damaging with that.
Mm-hmm.
But from a rules standpoint, it does not trigger... On damage being dealt, it just happens like lifelink. So it can end up drawing the game in a situation where you're at 5 and your opponent's at 5.
Yes.
And they deal 5 damage to you and they also take mm-hmm. 5. So
they
watch
can
out
draw
for
the game.
Yeah, watch out for situations of you both going to 0.
Yeah, I wonder how many games are going to be drawn in the limited format because of this card.
It isn't uncommon, but it'll be sweet when that happens.
Yeah, and then obviously there's some good rares. I think we're looking at one right now. Dread Defiler is a good one. 6 and a black, 6/8. Devoid, big dude. And then it has 3 and a colorless. To exile a creature from your graveyard and target opponent loses life equal to that card's power.
So it's already just a big fatty with random upside.
Yeah, not really much to say other than as good upside. Bearer of Silence, another Devoid card that's quite good. 1 and a black, 2/1 flyer that can't block. And then when you cast it, you may pay 1 and a colorless. And if you do, target opponent sacrifices a creature. It's just like, it's a 2-for-1. Obviously, the 2/1 flyer doesn't hold that much impact at, like, turn 4 of the game, but, like, it's enough that with the sacrifice that, presumably, you're gonna get out of it at that point, it adds up to be a good removal spell that leaves behind a 2/1 flyer, is the way I look at it.
Yeah, and you can also set it up so that you get to kill your opponent's biggest creature and things like that.
And obviously, the fact that it's just a 2/1 flyer for 2 when you need it to be is also quite good.
Yep, and I think the last rare to be on the lookout for is Remorseless Punishment.
Mm-hmm.
3 black-black, target opponent loses 5 life unless that player discards 2 cards or sacrifices a creature or a planeswalker. Repeat this process 1.
Yeah, this card is a mouthful. There's no real way to like shortcut the way this card works. You kind of just have to read the whole thing. But the card, I think, is pretty legitimate. Obviously, like, in most games of Magic, people, obviously, life total is a resource. You only get so much of it in most games. But in Limited, it almost is valued more because your deck isn't as cohesive and consistent as a constructed deck.
Yeah, there's less synergies involved and less power levels, so you're not able to survive a game or close a game as quickly at, say, 5 life or something like that.
Yeah, so there are games where, like, even if it's just lose 5 life and target player sacrifices a creature, like, 5 life matters sometimes. That's almost worth a card in Limited.
Yeah.
It's the same way life gain is slightly better in Limited than it is in other formats.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a 2-mana 2/2 in Constructed, the gains 2, is not, like, that's just not a card. But in Limited, the gain 2 is relevant, and obviously a bear is fine stats as it is.
Yeah. So you can even look at the fact that even if your opponent chooses to lose 5 life, life is a resource, so this card just interacts with resources on a bunch of different levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess onwards to red. This is where I feel like the power level of the colors starts to drop off a bit. I feel like Esper is the 3 greatest colors in this set, which, yeah. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but, like, I think they're the colors that have the strongest commons and uncommons.
Mm-hmm.
So red... my top card overall is... Top card overall, obviously, this is a top 5. But it's 2 and a red, Devour in Flames. This card's just another good removal spell. It, 2 and a red, sorcery, deal 5 to a creature or planeswalker. Now, it has a downside. You do have to return a land you control to your hand when you cast this card as an additional cost. But, again, like we've been saying this whole episode, unconditional removal spells are just very powerful.
Things to point out, you do return the land when you cast it, not mm-hmm. when it resolves. So if it gets countered, you still have to bounce the land.
Mm-hmm.
People cannot respond and destroy the land when you bounce it.
Yep.
And
you are allowed to bounce a land that you tapped mana with.
Correct.
Yeah. From there, another removal spell is probably my next favorite. Reality Hemorrhage. It's a Devoid spell. It's just 2-mana shock with Devoid.
And it's also instant speed. They've actually been giving us instant speed removal for once, which is nice.
I actually think the removal in this set overall is much higher power level on average than recent sets have had. At least at common and uncommon. So it's 1 in a red, Devoid, instant speed, deal 2 to a creature or player. That's it. But, like, it kills a lot of things in this limited format. It's good for the same reasons Tar Snare is. Slightly worse because it doesn't shrink the creature stats, but it costs 1 less mana, so.
And you also get to point it at people's faces.
Yeah, which is relevant. I mean, playing, like, an aggressive deck, you sometimes just need burn spells to finish them out. And this card is a common, so you can pick up a healthy amount of them. From there, the cards get significantly worse that I like. Zada's Commando is 1 in a red, 2/1 with first strike. And then it has the Cohort ability, which is new to this set, where you tap this creature and tap an untapped ally you control. And this one, the Cohort, deals 1 to target opponent. So it's not a great card, but, like, it goes well in an aggressive deck where 2/1 first striker can be hard to deal with early on via the creature route. And then late game, once your opponent sets up a board stall, you get to start burning them out with the Cohort ability.
Mm-hmm. I know one that I like is another removal spell. I think it's the only other removal spell in red is mm-hmm. Boulder Salvo. Yep. Is 4 in a red, deal 4 damage to target creature, and then has the surge cost of 1 in a red.
Yeah, so a lot of the time you're going to want to be, like, casting a 2-drop and then surging the spell in a turn in mm-hmm. order to get maximum effectiveness out of it.
Yeah.
Or obviously Intuitive Giant. Like, most of these cards, they just pick up value because your teammate's doing things. Another card I like, Akum. I can't read my handwriting. I know where he's at on here. Flameseeker. He's actually right in front of our face. 3-mana 3/2. It's, like, baseline stats for a 3-drop in Limited. And then it has Cohort. Discard a card if you do draw a card. I think this card's very, like, it's a super average common. Obviously, the Cohort effect isn't super great, but you get to have a middle-range creature in your deck that in the late game helps you have less bad draws. And then that really covers red. That was all 5.
Yeah, rares to look out for. Chandra's obviously good because she's a planeswalker. Oath of Chandra
is
just it's just a removal spell.
Yeah, deals 3 to a thing when it comes into play.
Fall of the Titans is absurd in Two-Headed Giant.
It's also just absurd in, like, one-player games.
Yeah, it's not absurd. It's a good rare, but in... Two-Headed Giant. So Fall of the Titans is red XX instant and has mm-hmm. a surge cost of red X.
Mm-hmm.
Fall of the Titans deals X damage to each of up to 2 target creatures and or players.
The reason this is especially insane in Two-Headed Giant, obviously, one, your teammate gets to enable it for you.
Yes.
Which helps already. And then it's just an awesome way to finish the game in Two-Headed Giant, because you get to target each of your opponents, and so it becomes double fireball to their face.
Correct,
because
the way that Two-Headed Giant rules work is, even though the two heads share a life total of 30 mm-hmm. points, when you play a burn spell, you have to choose either, say, Nate and I were the Two-Headed Giant, yep. you have to either say...
Nate or Nate. Yeah.
Nathaniel. Mm-hmm. You have to say, oh, I'm going to Lightning Bolt Nate, or I'm going to Lightning Bolt Nathaniel. So mm-hmm. with Fall of the Titans, you get to choose two different players, so I'm like, deal 5 to Nate and deal 5 to Nathaniel, and they take 10 in all and go down to 20.
Yep, and obviously then, even then, it has the backup mode of just, like, probably killing two creatures.
Which is really good.
Yeah, 2-for-1s obviously are good.
plot twist.
So, green cards. Green is where things really fall off. I think green is, again, the worst color in this set, as far as commons and uncommons go. So I think the best card is probably Seed Guardian. I know this is the only one that we really talked too much into when we were going over the set together.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 green-green, 3/4 with reach creature. And when it dies, you put an XX green elemental into play, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. So this card isn't, like, it's pretty much a 2-for-1. A lot of times, Seed Guardian is going to come out. It'll be 3/4. It'll die.
Yeah,
it'll trade with a creature or something.
No, like, bare minimum, it makes a 1/1, because when it dies, mm-hmm. it is in the graveyard to check how many creatures are in the graveyard.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time in Limited, other things will have died by then,
mm-hmm.
so you'll have a consistent 2/2 or 3/3 that it creates when it dies.
Yeah, and sometimes it even, like, is bigger than the Seed Guardian when it dies. You can get a 4/4 or 5/5 really late into the game.
Yeah.
And obviously, this thing's stats aren't set when it comes into play, so it's going to keep growing as things leave the battlefield. X is a variable number, and okay, it's constantly checking. It's the same
wording. So the token does have the ability of...
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's the same way Voice of Resurgence's token works.
Okay.
So moving on from there, things get worse. Loam Larva is not an awful card. Obviously, this card doesn't...
I don't know. I'm going to go on record and say this card is pretty awful.
I like this card. Obviously, it doesn't have great stats. It's a 1 green, 1/3 creature. So 1/3 essentially puts it into the range of being a blocker. And then when it enters the battlefield, you get to search your library for any basic land and put that land on top of your library. Now, obviously, this isn't, like, any card advantage or anything like that, but it does help fix your mana.
Yes.
Because you get to look for, you know, it finds wastes, it finds whatever your splash is or whatever, mm-hmm. which helps a lot. And then from there...
All right, so before you move on to different cards,
I'm still talking about Loam Larva, and it's an optional ability for the Loam Larva, which means, like, late in the game, you obviously don't want to draw a dead card. You can play this card and not have to worry about putting a land on top. It's an option.
Okay. All right, so back to the Seed Guardian thing. Mm-hmm. I was actually correct.
That does appear to be true. Yeah.
So when Seed Guardian dies, it makes an XX token, and X is only checked when the ability makes it. So if you have three creatures in the yard, it just is a 3/3 forever.
That's weird. I thought it was the same rating as Voice's Resurgence.
Because Voice makes a token that has the mm-hmm. ability. It is, like, yeah, elemental creature token onto the battlefield with
the ability. Okay, yeah, yeah. So it was different. My bad.
Yeah. So
now you know that for when you're playing at the pre-release.
Yep.
It's not an obvious ruling, to be honest.
Yeah, if you don't understand templating and how the rules mm-hmm. interact with stuff like that, it's not obvious.
Another creature, which is where I think green strength lies in the set, is Embodiment of Insight. This is actually a somewhat cycle from the set. This one is a 4 green, 4/4 with vigilance, which is okay stats. And then land creatures you control have vigilance, so that's a bonus. And then landfall, whenever land enters the battlefield, you get to turn one of your lands into a 3/3 with haste until end of turn. It doesn't get counters, it just comes base stats 3/3. This does, you know, it's probably the best of the cycle in that your lands get to tap for mana post-combat after you attack with them, since they have vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
I think this card's fine. I would be not excited to first pick it, but... It's potentially could be the best card in a pack somehow.
Yeah, I'll go on record again and say no.
It probably won't. You're right.
Another one I like is Tjuru, Path Warden.
This card's very basic.
Yeah, 4 green, elf warrior ally. Ooh, I do like 3-creature type creatures.
There's a lot of these in the set.
It's vigilance, trample, 5/4. So it's just your standard green big creature with mm-hmm. keywords that make it better as a big creature.
And obviously this card isn't great, but it's a common that kind of just is a good filler for your deck.
And outdoes other 5-drop commons on the vanilla test scale. Yeah.
Another card I have on here is Stalking Drone, which is One and a green, 2/2. So there we go, baseline stats. The Void also. And then you get to pay colorless to give it +1/+2 until end of turn, which is very similar to a card from a while back, Rootwalla, which was a powerful card in its time. Not a super powerful card, but it was a good draft card. And even in sets like Vintage Masters, I believe, is the one that it was printed in for Limited, where it was just a reasonable card to take.
Yeah, one key sentence you left out was you can only activate the ability once per turn.
That is an important
it's not just better fire breathing.
Yeah. It's obviously, I knew that when I talked about it. It is a good effect still.
Yeah.
Having almost a 3-4, 4-2 is a good effect with very little investment. If you look at cards that saw play in like Battle for Zendikar, Sludgecrawler was a pretty decent card, and that was just 1 mana, 1/1 that had the shade effect. Not bad fire breathing, but had the shade effect that pumped both stats, +1/+1 for 2 mana though. So I think we should combine colorless and multicolored spells, as there weren't a lot of...
Yeah, it's not because we're going to sit here and be like, yep, all the multicolored spells are good, draft any of them you open.
Yep. So the big thing is most of the colorless spells and most of the multicolored spells are rare, but there are a few that are not. Ones to note, Spatial Contortion is a good one. It's 1 and a colorless, give a creature +3/-3, which, you know, if you're not familiar with this type of effect, is mostly used as a removal spell, as a sort of bolt effect, where you give a creature -3 and it kills it. But then it also has the upside, sometimes you get to push through 3 damage
randomly,
or whatever.
Yeah, randomly, you just win the game because you get to pump your thing. Also, the art is actually pretty insane.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of purple things going on, there's like an elf with an extended arm. No idea what's happening here, check it out. Another insane one, I think this is a multicolored one, is 1 blue-black Mind Melter. It's a 2/2 that can't be blocked, and it has the Void. And then it has 3 and a colorless to activate it, and target opponent exiles a card from his or her hand. So you get 3 mana 2/2 that can't be blocked. It's good, right? And late in the game, it becomes not a card advantage engine. Also, important fact, you can only activate this ability at sorcerer speed. You don't get to lock your opponent's draw steps. And it also fuels your processors. So there's a bunch of positives to this card.
Another one that I like is the uncommon blue-white creature. It's 1 and a blue and a white, Chopper. Yep. Reflector Mage, and when Reflector Mage enters the battlefield, return target creature an opponent controls to its owner's hand. That creature's owner can't cast spells with the same name as that creature until your next turn.
So obviously, effects like Mana War have always been good and limited, where it's just like low stat creature that gives you tempo by bouncing a creature. This one obviously is especially good in that it picks up an extra stat over actual Mana War, which is a 2 and a blue, 2/2 that bounces a dude to their understand.
Yes.
This one picks up an extra toughness, and then they also can't cast that spell until next turn, which honestly is an awesome tempo advantage. Along the lines of maybe a tempo deck, Storm Chaser Mage, which is a blue-red 1/3 with flying and haste and prowess. That's it. Just has a bunch of keywords. But it's a good card. Like, a 1/3 flyer for 2, that's fine. As it is, has haste, which means you get in that damage early. And then, like, honestly, it's pretty easy to trigger prowess once per turn if you're drafting a lot of the good spells in this set.
Yeah.
Which we didn't mention most of them, but there are some pretty decent, like,
yeah, because
tempo
most
cards.
Of them are the middling, like, they're Bs and Cs instead of being As, so we're not really going to mention them.
And then, like, a last card on this top 5 for multicolored / colorless is Hedron Crawler, which is a super... It's an enabler.
Yeah,
really.
It's the mana dork of the set, and it's
2 generic mana
for an 0/1 artifact creature construct.
Yeah.
And it has tap, add a colorless to your mana pool.
Yeah, it enables your, you know, colorless costs in your decks, and then also, if you needed to, it's a chump blocker late game, which, you know, is relevant. And is generally just mana ramp for your non-colorless requirements.
Yeah, and along the lines of that, I also like Seer's Lantern. It's another common mana rock, which I think is going to be relevant in this. It's just 3 generic for an artifact, and it has tap added colorless, and then has 2 tap scry 1.
Yep. So, like, it's not super powerful, but, like, it can put you up to your bigger spells, enable your colorless synergies, and also, if you have extra mana, you get to scry with it. which, you know, is not irrelevant. You can pick up a few pieces of card advantage throughout the game. I didn't write anything about lands down. We didn't really talk about these much.
Yeah, so the big thing I see about the lands is, obviously, you'll know if you want to have colorless sources in your deck or not.
Yes.
Because it'll be based on having creatures that need colorless to activate.
Same idea with dual lands. You'll know if you want to pick up a dual land. Fixing's obviously still good and limited. And especially being that man lands are in this set, man lands are powerful.
Yes.
I think the big thing to look for in the set, I think Unknown Shores is great. I think Crumbling Vestige is great. I think Holdout Settlement is great at the common level. Obviously, Unknown Shores is the card we've had for a while. Taps for a colorless, and then one and tap it to add one mana of any color to mana pool. So it just filters. But it also enables your colorless synergies and also helps you splash a third color in your deck.
Correct. Yeah, I think at least going into the draft format early on, my thought will be, if you have a plan and if you have cards that require colorless mana and you get past a pack with maybe seven cards left in it and there's nothing really that's in your plan at the moment, instead of thinking about hate drafting or thinking about taking a mediocre sideboard card, I would take things like Holdout Settlement or Unknown Shores, so that way you can play those to give you your waste mana instead of having to try and pick up wastes. I think I value these cards a lot better than trying to draft wastes.
I think of the cards, I think Holdout Settlement is my least favorite of the three. Crumbling Vestige enters the battlefield tapped, but it doesn't put you off your mana requirements for that turn.
Okay.
Because when it enters the battlefield, you add one mana of any color to your mana pool, and then next turn we'll start tapping for colorless. So you don't get to go off curve with it. It's sort of it's a neat design, really. I really like the design of the card. And then Holdout Settlement taps for a colorless, and then you can tap an untapped creature to add one mana of any color to your mana pool.
One thing to keep in mind is it's tap. Holdout Settlement, tap an untap creature you control, add one
mana. Yes, yes.
Tap out my team, make 10 mana. Yeah.
Obviously, like, it's decent fixing, and a lot of time you'll find yourself with, like, maybe a spare Scion that's doing nothing that you use to filter, or whatever, just a chump dude. So, you know, it's still pretty decent.
My point is just to look at these cards instead of wanting to play wastes in your deck.
Yeah, wastes, honestly, if you're playing wastes in your deck, look at it as an extra color. Because that's what it is, especially in limited. Wastes take up the common slot and are seriously something you have to think about when you pick. Another thing to think about, obviously, pay attention to the dual lands and packs. They're going to be very good. I think three colors are going to be very, or two colors splash a color is going to be very popular in this set. And not much else to say about that. It covers all the colors, multicolored lands. So constructed cards. I know I have a few that I like. We kind of briefly went over this right before the show. So we didn't have a super great list, but there's some important ones. I really like Grasp of Darkness. I think it's going to be a good removal spell in Standard for time to come. It's nothing insane. It's not going to make a new deck or anything, but like there's black decks in Standard, and they like having two drop removal spells. It's as simple as that. And Neg 4 kills most of the things in Standard that are relevant.
I think Goblin Dark Dwellers is going to be another one that we were talking about.
It's a very good red card. It's very good for grindy matchups. It is just also a large body on its own.
With Menace, which is actually a relevant ability.
Yeah, I mean, like, having to be blocked by two creatures that, if you're playing, like, a removal-centric deck, which is, I think, the kind of thing this deck goes into with, like, Colgan's Command and stuff like that, it definitely becomes relevant that sometimes you can't block this creature. I know in my little bit of testing I've done, like, with Austin, that there were definitely times where I died to this guy because I couldn't block him with my one creature. Another card, Matter Reshaper. This is a colorless card. It's 2 and a colorless, 3/2, so 3 mana, 3/2. When it dies, you reveal the top card of your library. If that card is a permanent with CMC 3 or less, you put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, you put that card in your hand. So at the worst, this card is putting a Hangar Rack Walker into play and it dies. Yeah. But like that's not how you plan it.
Yeah, at the worst, it's replacing itself.
Yeah, at the worst, it's a 3 mana, 3/2 that replaces itself, which is a 2-for-1, which is great.
It also works well with Collected Company.
Yeah, it works excellent with Collected Company. Its biggest downside is that it costs colorless mana, and so it becomes a little harder to play in some decks, but I don't think that'll be a problem. Obviously, the new Planeswalker Nissa, I think that card's quite good. Of the two Planeswalkers, I like Chandra, but I think Nissa has maybe a little more potential, being that she's in such a weird spot where her abilities aren't super powerful, but she's really pushed aggressively, being 3 mana.
Yeah.
Where she defends herself with an 0-1 plant every turn, which is decent already. And with other things in her deck, you can play like a green-white deck with her and Gideon, where you get to start Anthem-ing, and there's plants all of a sudden become big and you get to put counters on them with her other abilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has a decent amount of potential in the deck. We already see these green-white token strategies in Standard already.
Yeah, and I think she's just another way to make the tokens better.
Last card, we were really struggling to find like a really impactful spot for the fifth card. I don't want to say Hedron Alignment.
Yeah, because that was going to be my runner-up of this sweet card.
Yeah, because obviously I don't think this card is very competitive, but it's, you know, it's going to affect deck choices. People are going to play it for fun.
I can't wait to sit across from it in Legacy, because people are talking about playing it in Legacy.
We wrote down officially Void Shatter, which is the Void Dissipate.
Yeah, which I think will be relevant.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously there's cards like Den Protector and Kolaghan's Command in Standard, or Ojitai's Command even, where the graveyard matters a lot, and Delve, even putting that off of Delve slightly, does matter. It's not obviously the greatest card, it's not anything super special, we've seen it before, it's not Standard breaking or anything, but it could be good for like a blue-black control deck or something like that. So,
and there also just aren't that many cards that are going to be that defining in Standard in the set, because it is a small set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that really covers everything for the set. Now, I know you wanted to mention this whole Proxy Gate scandal.
Yeah. So we're actually going to have two segments in this episode, which will be sweet.
Yeah, that's a special one for us.
Yeah. And this is a special episode.
Yeah.
So Proxy Gate, if you don't know what that is, I might get around to putting the link to the Reddit thread in the show notes. I might not. No promises there. But it was pretty much a store down in Maryland got an email from Wizards telling them that they could not run a proxy Legacy event, I believe, or something along those lines, without chancing the loss of their Wizards Play Network ability or Wizards Play Network
certification
or whatever. Which it sounds like Wizards heard that they were doing that through someone complaining about it or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So obviously Reddit being Reddit and Magic players being Magic players, they decided that the sky was falling and that we would never be able to play Vintage or Legacy or something like that ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Which, on a side note, I can understand, honestly, not ever having proxy Legacy events, because there's actually relatively cheap ways to get into Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think
competitively.
I don't think it's the end of the world to not have proxy Legacy or even proxy Modern. I definitely don't see there being any need to have proxy Modern events.
Obviously, you know where I started with Legacy. I started by playing Burn that somebody else built for me. And, like, that deck is, I mean, it's not super cheap, but it is very relatively cheap. You can probably build it for $600, maybe less.
You can do less. Like, I won the, $200 in store credit when I split with Crotal that one time and had pretty much the whole Burn deck built. Legacy is going to be expensive to get into. Modern's going to be expensive to get into. I think the big thing people are worrying about is Vintage. And it's there's two reasons that I'm not as big on the making people pay money to play Vintage. One, I expect people to still own dual lands and things like that. Like, I expect Vintage to be the format where you own Legacy, so you get to play Vintage because it's mostly your Legacy cards.
Yeah, but then obviously Power 9 is very expensive.
Yeah, and I think it's also the precedent of they've always had the 10 proxy tournaments and the 15 proxy tournaments, so I don't see why it should change now.
If you look back over years and years of Magic, there have always been proxy Vintage tournaments. Power, I mean, obviously in the last couple of years, it's spiked to beyond reasonable prices. Like, it's super expensive now. But, like, even years ago, people proxied Vintage because Power was expensive. Even, not like it is now, but it was still a couple $100 per, like, piece of Power.
Yeah, and there's very few people who own Power who say they don't want people proxying, because most of the time, if people don't proxy, the people with Power don't have anyone to play with in tournament settings.
Yeah, and, like, if you look at the people who play Vintage, for the most part, they're the same people who have been playing Vintage for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And, like, I think one of the big things to pull out from this whole scandal, I guess you call it, is Wizards isn't going to come hunting down stores who have... There's no real way for them to find out if a store held a proxy Vintage event.
Yeah, there's a, like, I'm going to link to a different Reddit post that someone did in response to one of the threads, and it pretty much talked about how it will just turn into don't ask, don't tell, except without the negative connotation that the military created for that. It'll be, yes, Wizards officially, if you email them and ask them what their opinion on proxy tournaments is, from a legal standpoint, no, you cannot do it, and we might take away your WPN status.
They have to tell you that, because that's what their legal thing is to say.
But they don't have the time and or money or the caring the resources to go hunt down stores and be like, hey, are you running proxy events to every single store in the WPN? So, like,
of course, if someone reports your store for you holding a proxy event, they have to act on it. That's legally what they have to do, according to their, you know, whatever they have written down at Wizards headquarters.
So I think that comes down to not pissing people off in your store, being nice to everyone, things like that.
And I think for the most part, the Vintage community, I'm speaking mostly about Vintage here. Obviously, we've talked about how, like, Legacy doesn't need us proxied as much, same with Modern, but Vintage, it does. The Vintage community is pretty tightly knit together. Most people know each other.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least here on the East Coast where we're at, the people who run the events are always the same people running the events.
Yeah.
You look at, there are the same events year after year, ran by the same people.
And even if the sky does fall and all of a sudden Wizards become some huge
evil corporate
entity, guess what? We can just run our own tournaments in ballrooms at hotels or in bars or
pubs
something
or
like
that. We've gone to IQs already where they've just been in hotels and stuff like that.
So you just don't. You host, like, as a player, you host your own tournament that has nothing to do with a Wizards Play Network store.
Yeah, you just have to make sure to advertise it. And obviously, then it won't be sanctioned or whatever, but
it already wasn't sanctioned, and it's not like the Vintage players are going to care about the lifetime one Planeswalker point that you get from an unsanctioned casual game of tournament.
So, like, that's our point of view on this, is maybe not, don't worry about it too much.
Sky's not falling. If the sky does fall, we have backup plans.
Well, at least if the sky does fall, make sure you catch it. Like, I'd rather not have that land on me.
There's always Force of Will to go play.
Yeah, there's always Force of Will, which I've been told is much like Vintage.
So maybe we'll play Force of Will sometime.
Maybe we'll put up a Force of Will episode of the podcast. Who knows? See you next week on the Force of Will episode of Bearded Magic.
Things that aren't happening right now.
Yeah, all right. I guess that's the end of our episode.
Yeah, thanks for listening to us talk about the set and talk about current goings on. We will be back to our actual numbered episodes next week, but this was just a bonus episode the set. Remember, go to mysavepoint.com and use the promo code BEARD.
Thank you guys for listening. Try and support the show. Thank you very much. Have a good day.